Normally at this time of year, we discuss how to get ready for the flu season. As you've no doubt seen in the news, there are many more extreme viruses that many are wondering about how or even if America's medical and healthcare system is and can become prepared for and to deal with. This confusion has caused fear in some, overreaction in others. Here with a balanced look at this issue is physician, as well as vice president and global editorial director of MedPage Today. We say good morning, Dr. Ivan Oransky. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
MedPageToday.com is the obvious location online of MedPage Today. And, doctor, certainly this is something that people in this country don't think of as something possible. Normally, you think of something like Ebola, enterovirus 68 is something more common in Central America, Ebola over in Africa. And here it is at our shores. And I was trying to think about a layperson way to put this into perspective. Is our medical profession sort of the, in this country, regarding these diseases, a Jiffy Lube where someone brings a vehicle in need of a transmission rebuild to, just not equipped to do the job?
Interesting sort of analogy there. I've used Jiffy Lube. They service my car periodically, so if that's a conflict of interest, I'll disclose that. But I think the U.S. medical system, although it's got some flaws and it's quite expensive and it's a bit discombobulated, you know, it's not quite as well organized as we'd like, it's actually doing much better than sort of your average oil and lube place. In fact, in other parts of the world, you talked about Ebola, for example, Liberia, Western Africa, the problems there are that we have this outbreak in the midst of, you know, severe poverty, in the midst of a system that just isn't well-equipped. Again, the U.S. medical system, we may make some fumbles in this case, and, you know, that's unfortunately inevitable, but I think we've got a pretty tight set of armor here that's going to protect us against not just the nicks and scrapes, but really against, you know, serious damage.
I think what some people are concerned about, and I wrote about this a couple of days ago, on the social media, the CDC had been proclaiming, as far as Ebola was concerned, airborne risk, don't worry about it. Airborne risk, not a concern, not in the realm of possibility. Then literally days after that, airborne risk, possible but not likely. It sounds like they're on a means of discovery along with everyone else on something like this.
Well, you know, everything is always possible in terms of how the virus may change or what we refer to scientifically as mutate. But as of now, Ebola actually doesn't have any risk in terms of airborne transmission. You really have to come in close contact with someone, you know, bodily fluids even, not just even close contact. So, again, there's always a chance that the virus will mutate, will change. But we've known about this virus now just about 40 years, first discovered in 1976. It hasn't ever become airborne. And certainly everything is always possible, but in the realm of possibilities, you know, the chance of Ebola becoming an airborne, changing into that sort of way of transmission is, I got to say, much, much smaller than, I think, the first virus that you mentioned when we first started talking here, which is the flu infecting a lot of people here in the U.S. I mean, that's still what we've got to be thinking about here in, you know, October. Here we are in the Northeast. That's going to be a much bigger risk than Ebola, period, but certainly more than Ebola being airborne.
And actually, I mean, this is one extreme to the other, to be sure, but what we do with someone with the flu, we obviously say don't go to work. Isolation is the key. That sounds like the similar thing where the American system, and, you know, we're instituting better safeguards at airports for people coming in from countries where Ebola is running rampant. Of course, you know, we're reacting instead of being proactive, which I guess is another argument for another time. But the countries where Ebola is prevalent, seems like the concept of isolation is not being practiced, and that's why the spread has been as rapid as it's been.
Yeah, I think, you know, they know the concepts, actually, and a lot of doctors there are pretty well aware of what's happening. You know, they've been having some serious problems on the ground because they just don't have the resources. You know, again, it may be very expensive, it may be quite cumbersome, but we can isolate a lot of people here in the U.S. If we truly had a big outbreak of Ebola, we'd obviously run into problems, but that seems extraordinarily unlikely. You know, they just don't have the resources there to do this. they're also up against some, I don't know about political, but some sort of cultural issues there where people just, they had a lot of fear, and you can understand a lot of that fear. People here have fear of this. And they actually were sort of confusing, you know, the fact that, well, people go to the hospital and often they die, which, of course, is true. It's true here, too. But that, there's not a cause-effect there. That's just a correlation. And they were actually lashing out against doctors. So this all became a very difficult issue. We just don't have that here. And one of the ways to help prevent the spread here in the U.S. and to prevent more Ebola from coming to our shores and more other diseases, because, again, you get on a plane nowadays, you're in another country, and, you know, you cross an ocean in 8 hours or so. Well, the best way to do it is actually to get the resources to those countries. And that does mean keeping the borders open. So whether it's U.S. folks going over there, people from the rest of the world going over there and helping out, bringing the resources, aid groups, et cetera, that's really the best way to prevent it from getting worse here.
Talking with Dr. Ivan Oransky, physician as well as vice president, global editorial director of MedPage Today, MedPageToday.com, on the web, and listening to Issues and Ideas. I mentioned the borders and open borders, and that's something where, concerning enterovirus 68, the first death, by the way, was a four-year-old here in New Jersey, and at least as we speak, CDC has confirmed 594 people across 43 states and D.C. with the illness. It's caused by the virus. The, if I remember the story right, doctor, the young boy here in New Jersey, the physician thought it was simply pink eye. In your observations, in your view, is the medical profession, are there enough well enough trained medical professionals to know the difference between enterovirus 68 and pink eye? Was this an aberration versus what might be a more common practice of misdiagnosis or something like this?
Well, you know, it's tricky, and actually this is true for Ebola too. You know, all of the signs and symptoms of early Ebola are exactly the same as the signs and symptoms of the flu. So it almost isn't, it ends up looking like a misdiagnosis, but if you look at the sort of overall picture, it's just a very difficult thing to tell. You know, I don't know all the details of that particular case in New Jersey, and I obviously can't comment on the specifics there. I haven't seen the patient or anything like that.
Sure.
But, you know, a lot of these diseases have similar symptoms, fever, you know, and the problem with, you know, something like enterovirus, which, again, it has infected, as you mentioned, about, you know, 500, there have been about 500 cases here in the U.S. The concerns are among kids who might have other problems with breathing, you know, say asthma and things like that. And so you really have to be on the lookout. But again, you know, we don't want to get into panic here, and we don't want to sort of say that every kid who, you know, gets a little sick or starts coughing in the middle of the night has enterovirus. Obviously, kids get sick. In fact, sometimes it's a good thing for them to be exposed to certain things, not enterovirus. And so, you know, we really have to just, you know, make sure the doctors are aware that's what the CDC is doing. There are always going to be outbreaks, and the trick is to let people know as soon as possible, let healthcare providers know as soon as possible to be on the lookout for certain symptoms, to be monitoring certain kids more carefully. Again, kids who have a history of asthma or other breathing problems. But, you know, sometimes these things happen and you don't know until you're a little bit into it, and that's probably what's happening here. And by all accounts, enterovirus, it'll probably get a bit worse, but probably get better much soon. It tends to come in waves like a lot of these things.
And certainly if the awareness is raised between not just the doctors who gain a better knowledge of diagnosis, teachers who, when they see a child, have a basic knowledge, a layperson knowledge of symptoms, and get the child to the nurse. A lot of school districts are seeing an influx of illegally immigrant children from Central America, whereas I mentioned enterovirus 68 is a lot more common than here in the States. Again, maybe hopefully those are school districts. They'll pay a little more attention to physical signs and the warning signs that the illness creates. But certainly, doctor, just as an overview and just to conclude the segment, it's not a reason for parents to put their kids in the bubble and keep them out of circulation and start thinking about homeschooling, is it?
No, I really think that would be a bad, you know, bad decision. Again, I'm not talking about any individual parent's decision. They should make whatever decision they're comfortable with. But in general, I think we want to back away from panic. I think we want to be vigilant, but not let it, you know, sort of completely overtake our lives. Again, the fact is kids get sick, and if you look over time, kids get colds, kids get all sorts of things, you know. A lot, sometimes parents who are exasperated will talk about their kids as, you know, little sort of bug factories, and what are they going to bring home today from daycare? But, you know, if you take precautions, if you, You know, the CDC, for example, recommends a flu vaccine for everyone above the age of 6 months. That's, you know, an evidence-based recommendation that they've made. And so that's something to think about, again, that's going to protect you. Because one of the things with enterovirus is that it seems to, and again, we're still learning about this and learning about this current outbreak, but it seems to be worse, and that's what we've been reporting at MedPageToday.com, when it is involved in other diseases. So in other words, if you're infected by more than one thing, not just enterovirus. So obviously anything you can do to protect yourself against other infections at the same time, be it the flu, be it something else, that's going to be a really good way to protect yourself.
And certainly as a parent, as just an adult, take charge of the medical care. And if you feel the need for a second opinion, by all means, certainly you have that freedom to get that. We've been joined this morning by the Vice President, Global Editorial Director of MedPage Today, MedPageToday.com on the web. Dr. Ivan Oransky, thanks so much for your education insight this morning.
Thank you. Thanks for your interest.